Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good afternoon and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I'm your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, Canada, all across Europe and Asia, and all across the continent of Africa. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, sharp. Don't miss out. Join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and never miss an episode by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, Himalaya app, and the Google Play Music app. On the show, I bring on entrepreneurs, speakers, podcasters, coaches, authors, amazing people who are influencing the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show during our live broadcast, call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. If he catches us on the recording, I invite you to join us Tuesday through Friday live at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my guest for today, Tony Bradshaw. Tony, welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
After that 11-minute introduction, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm just really excited to be here, just reaching out and helping people. I was able to meet with a couple today and talk about their financial situation and just kind of give them a little bit of hope and encouragement. You know, it's just the thing that wakes you up every day and gets you going.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. So the title of this episode is The Millionaire Choice with author Tony Bradshaw. Tony grew up in a lower income neighborhood in Nashville, Tennessee. In 1996, he realized he was mismanaging his money and knew something needed to change. That's when he set out to learn how to handle money better. At age 25, Tony made his millionaire choice, his choice to become a millionaire by age 40. And he accomplished this goal in 2011. With a degree in mechanical engineering, Tony spent the first 6 years of his career as an engineer network administrator. In 2001, he entered the financial education world as part of an internet business and development group, where he spent 16 years bringing financial education products to the online world. Serving as CIO and COO for a major financial education company, Tony helped shape the strategy, technology, and systems to deliver financial education to those in need. During his journey, Tony realized his own message and vision for helping people with their personal finances. In June 2017, Bradshaw began writing The Millionaire Choice with the vision of helping anyone become a millionaire, no matter their income, ethnicity, or financial situation. Tony aspires to create a movement of financially educated and wealthy people who will make it their mission to fight poverty and help those in need around the world. He calls it The Millionaire's Manifesto, and you can read it at www.themillionairechoice.com. Go to themillionairechoice.com. His LinkedIn and Facebook links are right there in the show notes. Connect with him on LinkedIn at Tony Bradshaw, and Facebook, connect with him. He is absolutely incredible. So, Tony, after reading all that, I am super pumped to dive in to my first question, which is why? What is your deep why for what you do? Why did you decide to become a millionaire?
Yeah, so growing up in the low-income area, you know, you don't really realize that you're living a low-income life when you're in it, right? And because you just wake up as a kid And just life is, you know, you just, whatever you're dealing with, you just, life is, and you don't know that things can be a lot better. And so you just kind of rinse, repeat is the way I like to say it, is, you know, you just kind of repeat the cycle. And that's what a lot of us in our families do. When you look at the statistics of 78% of people are living paycheck to paycheck, well, you can pretty much guarantee that that stat hasn't changed, that statistic hasn't changed in probably 20 or 30 years. And everybody's living paycheck to paycheck and have for generations. And it's just because people don't realize that they can do something different with their money in their life. And I was no different. I was doing the same thing my parents were doing. And I didn't know how to manage money. My grandmother didn't teach me. My aunts and uncles, they weren't doing any better. My parents weren't doing any better. And so I got in my 20s and had a wake-up call. You know, I got my first W-2 out of college, and it was $39,000. And I believe prior to that, you know, I might have seen $6,000, you know, 1 year on the job, you know, working while I was in college. And it just hit me for the first time. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. Where did it all go? Because I've got $500 in the bank, and that's it. And I've got $16,000 in debt, which is a car and some credit cards. And I'm just, wow, where is this? Where did this money go? And so I took inventory, looked around my studio bedroom apartment, living in with my parents, paying $200 a month in rent, which was a really good deal. And I would recommend it for anyone.
right?
Especially for a 20-something. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. And I was doing my part. And I looked around. I'm like, man, I don't have a lot. You know, I've got a nice stereo system, which I invested in. I did plan ahead a little bit because I figured – I'm going to get married someday and I need a 4-door car because we're going to stick kids in the back seat. So I bought a 4-door car on credit interest. I figured my wife would probably buy the furniture. She'd probably have furniture because girls like furniture and stuff. And so I'm like, I better put my money into the electronics. And that way when we get married, I'll bring the electronics and she'll bring the furniture and we'll have a good marriage. And it did work. It did work out that way, actually. So I was kind of pleased with myself, but the thing I wasn't pleased with is that I was in debt, you know, and I wasn't doing the right things with my money, because $39,000 should not really turn into $500 in your bank account. And so,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not a good formula, you know, it's not working for me. And so I decided I needed to learn about money, and I didn't know anybody to go to teach me. So I just did what I knew how to do, which is read. And so I went to the bookstore and started reading everything I could on money, you know, Smart Money Magazine, Kiplinger's Magazine.
Yep.
And about 90 days after I started reading, I'm like, you know, this money thing is really just a math problem. And I'm pretty good with math, and it's not even sophisticated math. And I can make these decisions and do this stuff, you know, and you know, I could be a millionaire by the time I'm 40. So I just started socking everything I could away into debt, paying off debt and investing. I mean, all at the same time, I just went for it whole hog and, you know, saved what I could. And yeah, that was kind of the beginning of my journey. You know, I was a little bit naive at 25, but I was on the road to becoming a millionaire. That was my decision.
That's awesome. This topic of being a millionaire has been covered many, 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 many times. There's many, many, many different ways of becoming a millionaire. The whole problem is that we know what to do, we just don't do it.
Like, yeah,
we just don't do it, you know.
I would say I don't know that I agree with that 100%. I would say there's a certain percentage of people that know what to do. They probably feel that something's wrong, but they don't really know what to change. And so, where I would say with it, this is
right.
The sad part of it. You know, we go to school for 12 years. You know, you get in first grade through 12th grade. Some of us go off to college. I went to college for 4.5 years. I wanted an extra half a year so I could play in the soccer championship again. and that was my choice. Those were my choices. But, you know, that's a lot of school. That's 16 years of school. And you know what? I studied math, English, and science, and I learned a lot about those subjects. But no one ever stopped to teach me about money and personal finance. And there's still not a good system to teach Americans about personal finance. And so if you don't learn it in school, where are you going to learn it from? And the people
right.
that learn it are usually left to their own devices, or they get lucky and, you know, maybe they got a parent that knows what they're doing. But you know, it's just a sad day that we go through that much schooling and that much effort and don't learn the basics about the one thing that really matters. You know, it affects our life for the rest of our lives, you know? And so
yep. – So my mom always told me, save everything, save everything, save everything, save everything, and get yourself into a Roth IRA. Like, that was her way of building wealth and, you know, whatever. And so I teach my kids what that value of that dollar does. And as many times as I've interviewed somebody who has said that they're a millionaire or teaches people how to become millionaires, is there's one common denominator is less debt, more investing, whether it be real estate, Bitcoin, whatever you're investing in, stocks, not really bonds anymore, but, you know, like if you're playing the stock market or if you're, you know, whatever you're doing, it seems like there's less debt, more investing, and making the money work for you by creating those passive income streams or what have you that allows that money to build.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, my book has the same kind of information in it. Usually what you'll find people in working in this space and teaching this, they'll usually latch on to one thing. They'll say, get out of debt, don't use debt. Some of them will teach you to leverage debt. You know, if you're getting into real estate properties or something like that, you know, leverage debt to buy. Yeah, put somebody else's money to work for you.
Yeah.
That kind of a model. I didn't do that angle. I think all debt carries some risk with it.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is we never expect the party to end. And that's what gets everybody into trouble. Your leverage goes well until the market downturns and all your properties are upside down like 2008 and you can't pay your loans and you can't get people in your properties and, you know, everything melts down, which I've talked to people that that's happened to. So all debt carries some amount of risk with it, even if you, you know, mitigate that. And so other things that people miss are they never expect their job to quit. You know, you never expect to lose your job. It's a foreign concept to go, oh, I just lost my job and I wasn't able to find a job for 6 months and I just got my house foreclosed on, or I just got my car repossessed. That's something that people don't plan for. And so when you talk about less debt, more saving, those are the, you know, tried and true formulas. And I teach those in my book as well because they work. And if you do the right things, you get the right results. And that's the whole thing about the money is math problem. It's just simple math, and it's not complicated. The average person can do it once you learn the right things to do. So I totally agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah. What I want to touch on real quick before we get into the transformation, Grant Cardone, because this is just something you said, Grant Cardone says leverage debt. Make other people's money, right? OPM. Everybody's talking about, oh, when you invest, you got to get other people's money. Don't use your money. Use other people's. Like, cool, got it. Awesome. Grant Cardone says leverage debt, and he'll leverage debt to buy more debt because he's into real estate and this, that, and the other. Dave Ramsey says debt is dumb, cash is king, no longer is the BMW the status of life, it's the paid-off mortgage. So on two spectrums, where do you fall?
I personally am a no-debt guy because I believe there's ways to make money. Yeah, I believe there's ways to make money and build wealth without debt. You don't have to have debt. All debt carries risk with it. And it's a question of whether you want to carry that risk or not. But I do also acknowledge that a lot of people get wealthy, extremely wealthy, leveraging debt. And so you can't say that it doesn't work because people do it. But you also have to acknowledge that they carry risk and not all of them make it. And so some of them end up upside down in the millions of dollars and have to dig out of that stuff because they leverage debt for their business. They leverage debt for rental properties. They overextended. And so, yes, both ways work. One carries risk. I choose to go on the no risk side and I choose to focus on building income and not trying to, you know, become wealthy with a fixed income. I want to see you grow your income to a level where you can accelerate your wealth building.
Yeah. And the way that I teach people – now, I'm not a financial literate – like, I still suck, you know. Like, I'll go out and be like, oh, well, I got to justify why I need this $30 T-shirt, you know. Like, I literally just the other day, because 4th of July is coming up and it's kind of getting around that time, you know, of the freedoms and, you know, everybody's, you know, partaking or whatever, a new shirt came out from the Chris Kyle Foundation, which, you know, being in the military – you know, I tend to support these foundations. And so a new shirt came out. I was like, I got to get it because it's the Chris Kyle Foundation and, you know, it's, you know, whatever. So I always support those guys. And my wife was like, what? what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to wear it for 4th of July, and I'm going to show my freedom and my patriotism and, you know, whatever. But what I don't justify is, like, I feel like going out and buying a new sofa, like, you know, or, like, some people just go, like, I bought a new whatever, you know. What I do justify is you need to have as many streams of income as you can. And right now I have 6 streams of income. And if one of those incomes dries up, like you said, that career, I feel pretty good that my other 5 are going to do pretty well. And the more streams of income, the more comfort I feel in my abilities to not let my kids go hungry. That's kind of like my why.
Yeah, I think that's a good model. I think I might draw a little bit of a line in the sand going, how many income streams is enough? Because I know people, yeah, because like if you got 6, you could have like, if you had 3 that were evenly distributed, you're it's all about risk, right? And so, because you only have so much time to focus, and there's this whole adage of the power of focus, the things that get your attention are the things that are the most successful. And so, yeah, and so if you can easily spin off 2 or 3 extra income streams and they're like very low maintenance, that makes sense. But if they become time demanding, you have to start, you know, doing this dollar costing, like where are you making the most money for your effort and where do you want to put your focus? But yeah, I'm a big proponent of multiple income streams. I think I got a little in my own personal life, my income continued to grow at a pretty astronomical level. And I really wasn't focused on multiple income streams until the income stream ended.
Got it.
And then you're like, okay, I was making really good money and that money's not there anymore. I wish I would have had a secondary income stream, you know? And I don't think people, that's the whole thing about the party. Nobody ever expects the party to end, even if you're making 6 figures or multiple 6 figures. You just don't expect it to quit until it quits. And then you're like, oh, Eric, what do I do now? And so I love the idea of the multiple income streams because it gives you a fallback plan.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the income streams, actually, I'll, 2 of them. One of them is this podcast right here, this radio show that we're on. I think it's sponsors. People buy ads to the show, you know, so there's some income. You know, it's a steady monthly income. You know, it's not like 10 grand, but I mean, I'm happy to make 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000, you know, a month just, you know, just doing this, you know, that this is awesome, you know? And then I've got some products, you know, like ebooks and, you know, some other things, you know, I'm going to make an online course. Like that would be an income stream, you know, but, you know, the ebooks and distribution of those, you know, it's a good supplemental thing, you know, a couple hundred, maybe 1,000, you know, I mean, nothing I have to do. It's already created one time. I just send the link out on a Facebook ad or an Instagram story ad. And then I get money in like that's awesome. You know, I only had to create it one time. So if you have these things that you want to create, you know, the passive income streams and different things, because I don't have to spend any time. All I have to do is take out a Facebook ad that's already been taken out. I just stop it when I feel like stopping it. I run it when I feel like running it. As everything's already done, all I do is push a button, pay for the ad. It runs the ad. Like, you know what I mean? So those types of incomes, I'm awesome, you know, about those. It's the trading time for dollars that I don't want to do. That's what I don't want to do, is spend 10 or 12 hours, you know, and then get that income. Like, that's just something I just don't want to do.
Yeah, you know? And I think you're talking about things that are scalable versus not scalable. And
100%.
If you get into trading time for dollars, you just better make sure that your time is worth a lot of dollars. And so,
100%.
If you can get paid, you know, $500 an hour to go out and trade time for money, you know, you should do that all day long. Lawyers are, you know, charging $250, $300 an hour, some of them more, a lot more than that. That's probably not a bad exchange of time for dollars, especially since they're in an expertise-driven field versus an entrepreneurial field, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, I was told, you know, years ago when I first got married, because I was the military party guy, like, everybody gets a shot. I was like Oprah in the bar, you know, like running out like $200 bar tabs. And, you know, the debt started coming up. I was like, oh, I need speakers for my car, and I need these car parts, and I need this, because I had a 92 Fox Body Mustang. Used to drag race it, got some new radials, got this.
Oh,
I mean,
you're
I was
speaking
like,
my language.
Oh, man. I was running up the debt. Like, I was like, charge it. I'll pay it off later. You know, like, but then I'm like up to my ears in debt. I'm like, oh, my God. And it took me like years to pay it off. Someone told me that either you make more money or you sell the debt. And so, you know, I had to make a hard decision, and I had to sell a truck because I just couldn't afford the truck payment. So I had to sell a truck, you know, and that was like a sobering moment. Like, okay, I need to get my stuff together. Like, this is ridiculous, you know? And then as I started paying things off, you know, I was like, oh, this feels great. Like, oh, there's another couple hundred dollars my way. And there's another couple. And then, it, you know, I do like Dave Ramsey's like debt snowball. So I did all that. And, you know, the one thing I don't like about Dave Ramsey is when he does his like debt-free screams. You ever notice that they'll be like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy for you. You paid off X amount of dollars in debt. That's great. What kind of income? Oh, we paid off $40,000 with $300,000 income. I'm like, you freaking better pay off $40,000 worth of debt with that type of income. Like, what?
Yeah, like in 2 months.
Every single time. I want to hear this one time. How much debt did you pay off? $100,000 with what kind of income? $39,000. That's what I
like. How'd you
hear.
Do that, right? Yeah.
Right?
Some
That's
people actually
want, yeah.
do that, yeah. Some people do some crazy stuff, but yeah.
Right? So let's get into that transformational moment. This is the meat of the show. What was a transformational moment in your life, Tony, that happened and then put you on the path to what you're doing today?
Yeah, so obviously I talked about being 25 and kind of having what I call the financial awakening. You just talked about yours where you were just trying to pay off all of your, you know, this debt, this Mustang and this truck and things like that.
Yep.
And so that was what I would call your financial awakening. And I had mine at 25 and decided, hey, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire. And I got rid of all my debt. And then I found my wife and she gave me another $20,000 in debt. And so that set me back a little bit. And I started paying on that while I was engaged. I figured I'm going to marry this girl in 6 months. I might as well go ahead and start getting rid of her debt too. And then I popped a kid. Then we popped out a kid. And then we popped out another kid, another kid, another kid. And, you know, six kids later, we're like, wow.
Six? Wait,
and,
wait, hold on. Six kids?
Yeah, we got six. Age 19 down to eight. Yeah, we stay pretty busy. And but they're wonderful. Three boys, three girls. And our first one started college this year. Yeah. So we had a good spread. And the youngest one's a little boy, and he's got his mama wrapped around his finger. And let me just say this. Yeah, let me just say this. Girls, like, I don't even know how they do it, but they come out of the womb with their daddies wrapped around their finger. And they just start, like, I'm like, who taught you how to do that? Because you didn't learn that from anybody. Why are you so cute and so, like, what? How does that work? And it's only the girls. The boys are not like that. The boys just stumble around. But the girls just come out with this, like, cute factor. But anyway, at 25, it was, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire. Then I got married and then I just stayed on track, man. It's just like, get out of debt, save and invest, get out of debt, save and invest. And you know, we haven't had, so that was 1996. We haven't had a consumer credit card debt since 1999. And we haven't had a car. We haven't had a car pay. This is a big one. We haven't had a car payment since like, probably like 1999, 2000. And we paid off all of our like miscellaneous debt. So I had to carry a little bit because, you know, just kids and stuff set us back some, but, so no consumer debt. We paid off all consumer debt totally in 2002, but I'm most proud of the fact that we haven't had any new car debt since, you know, before that. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Cause you don't, you probably just don't go buy a brand new car.
No, we just pay cash. We bought our first used car that we paid cash for. Now I could tell the story of me being 16 and, where I bought my first used car with my own money, and it was $120, and it was a project. It was a hot rod project, and and what was funny is the guy, I saw this car sitting in this guy's yard, and I drove by it a few times, and this thing, like, it had dents. Every quarter panel and every fender had a huge dent in it. It was basically a GTO, if you're familiar with that Pontiac hot rod GTO, like, except 1971. And I saw this thing, and I went by, and I said, hey, how much you want for that car? I've seen it's been sitting there for months. And he goes, $200. And I said, okay. Is it, like, I'm like 14, 15 years old. And I said, I'll give you $120 for it. Here's my number. If you want to sell it, let me know. And he called me back in like 2 weeks, and I sold it to me for $120. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. And, you know, I didn't think much of it back then, but now that I'm older and wiser, I'm like, that's pretty cool for a 14-year-old kid to do. But this guy, he had a DUI, and he basically hydroplaned that car into a barbed wire fence one night. And that's where he got his four dents, and there were barbed wire scratches all over the hood. And that was my project car, and so I started building that thing, and it was a lot of fun, and I love that car. It was my favorite car until I got this Jeep that I'm driving now, and so lots of fun there. Yeah, Jeeps are amazing. But
Very cool.
Yeah, we played – my wife and I, our first used car we bought was $3,250, the motor in her car that she had, you know, financed. We had it paid off, but it blew up, and so we had to go find a used car, and we weren't going to do debt. And so we went ahead and, you know, found a car, $3,250, and it was what we needed, and it worked great, and it met our needs, and we drove that until we could afford, you know, a minivan, I think was the next thing we bought her. But yeah, no new cars, man. It's just used cars. Cause when you do the math on a new car,
it's ridiculous.
Oh, it absolutely destroys your ability to build wealth. And the bad thing is people buy them. And then 5 to 7 years later, when they go out of warranty, they go buy a new one and they do it again and again, and they're just compounding the damage to their wealth, their ability to build wealth. They're just constantly compounding that damage. And it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, every time you buy a new car, you're destroying your ability to build wealth to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yep. Yep. My aunt hasn't owned a car in like forever. Like as far as the back as I can remember, she leases. Like that's all she does. She just leases. Her credit's like stellar. So she gets those awesome, you know, lease deals, you know, $100 a month, you know, like these ridiculous lease deals every 2 years, right back in to get another car, right back in. She hasn't owned a car in forever. All she does is just lease that car. That's it, you know? And she's like, if you do the math, like if you have excellent credit and you know what you're doing, like you're not, I mean, you're probably end up going to be paying, you know, maybe what, 20,000, whatever. She's like, I don't have to worry about it. It's not going to die. If it dies, I take it back to the dealership. The dealership deals with everything. Like, I ain't got nothing to worry about. So she just gets regular maintenance. It stays under her miles, and she swears by the lease process because she knows. She goes, you got to know how to play the game. I'm like, I would suck at that.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know, though, because I actually did math on it, and it was on a different car.
Yeah.
And I would tell you that a lease purchase, and if she's doing $100 a month, I don't know what she's driving, but that's a sweetheart of a deal.
Sedan.
Huh?
Yeah, just like, you know, it's the sedan, you know, she's not a truck, just, you know, small cars.
Yeah, Ford. Cause I had a buddy that had a Mercedes, and it was red leather on the inside, he was paying $700 a month. But his argument was the same. I never have to worry about it breaking down. It's just replaceable.
No.
And it was a millennial mindset, which is I don't own anything.
Yep.
I just, you know, replace it when it's done. And that's way worse. The way he's doing it is way worse than buying a new car.
My grandfather actually retired from Ford, so our family gets a Ford discount.
That helps.
So, yeah. Oh, definitely. So what is your message? Right. I mean, we're talking about this transformational moment, right? We're getting these cars, you know, you're like, look, I'm making a decision by 40 or by, you know, at 25. So by 40, I want to be a millionaire. I'm doing the investing. I'm sure it sucks at the time. You know, I'm like the ramen noodle guy. Like if I need to save, I'm going to eat some ramen noodles and suck it up for like a couple years. And then I can, you know, sit back and breathe a second. Right. So what is your message to everybody listening right now who's in debt? They're like, I'll never be a millionaire. It's insurmountable for me to do that. I'm living paycheck to paycheck, which I did look this up. 78% to 80% of everybody who has a job, I didn't say anything about entrepreneurs or business owners or whatever, but it just says the workforce. 78% to 80% of the workforce in America lives paycheck to paycheck. And if one of those paychecks died, they'd be done. They'd be screwed.
Yeah, 3 out of 4 people you meet on the street. So think about that. 3 out of 4 of your family members, 3 out of 4 of the people you go to church with, if you go to church, 3 out of 4 people you meet going to pump your gas at the grocery, you know, at the market, the supermarket or whatever. Everywhere you go, 3 out of 4, unless you're, you know, living in, you know, I don't know, Washington, D.C. or something, they're probably not living paycheck to paycheck up there. But it just changes your whole perspective. And so you asked me about my why. You know, for me, the reason I wrote this book is because I was traveling on airplanes and meeting people. And, you know, after working in the financial industry for 15 years at a major financial education company, you kind of get a little bit of tunnel vision and you think of the world as a different place, like you're helping all these people. But then I started meeting all these people who had no idea about financial literacy or what to do with their money. And these people were making $100,000, $150,000 a year and didn't know what to do with their money. And they're just like, it's just slipping through their fingers. And then you'd meet other
right.
people who are making less money and they're in the same situation. So it really doesn't matter if you're making a little bit of money or a lot of money, you're still making the same stupid mistakes with money. And so I just felt like there were a lot of people that needed to be served. And that's what I'm really trying to do. And for me, it was, you know, I wanted to be a millionaire at 40 because, you know, at the time when I decided to become a millionaire, I was making about $40,000. And I figured if I had $1 million in investments, that would spin off about 10% roughly. And I was looking at S&P index funds and stuff like that.
Yep.
And if it spins off 10, then I'm making $100,000 a year. And that's twice what I'm making now. So I could live life any which way I wanted to. Now, as I got closer to that number and I got 6 kids, I'm like, well, that's not quite enough money to live life the way I want to. You know, $1 million doesn't
right.
look quite as luxurious when you're actually getting closer to the number. You start really having a true picture of what finances really are. But for a 25-year-old guy on a journey, it was a great place to start. And that's where I think people need to start, is to go, you know what, I can become a millionaire. And that's why I called it The Millionaire Choice, my book, The Millionaire Choice, because I do believe it's about a choice. I was a 25-year-old young man. I made a choice. J.V. Crum, who you had on the show a few
yep.
weeks ago, he made a choice. And he actually hit his goal, I think, by age 25. I think that's what he said.
Yep.
Yep. And I met another guy he grew up in L.A. Compton, the only white guy in a Hispanic and African-American community. I asked him how he survived. He said they had pity on me because I was the only white dude. And he made it. But, his dad's still living in that environment. But he said, you know what? I don't want to live like my dad. I want to live differently. And he set
right.
a goal to be a millionaire by age 30, and he made it. And so it's really about having this financial awakening and choosing to have a different life and making a choice. It's a different life
right.
choice. Not living by debt. I was counseling a couple recently, and they're in their 70s, and they're in a horrible financial situation. They have no assets, and they're struggling to manage the debt load that they have. And it's just a very sad situation to be in, and they're going to be able to do some things to help themselves. But you just don't want to be there. And so you have to make different decisions now, no matter what age you are. And so if a young guy, you know, coming out of Compton, L.A., can become a millionaire by the time he's 30, and he really probably worked from age 18 to 30. So 12 years, he did it in 12 years. I did it in 15. I met another guy recently, great guy named Robert Sherritt. And this dude, like, he blew my mind. He was a cocaine dealer. He grew up, you know, in the cocaine world. His mom was
yeah.
a cocaine user. His dad died in prison. He became a cocaine dealer, got arrested by the FBI, and then got sent away for, I don't even know how long he was put away for, but he just got out like 7 years ago, and now he's a thriving businessman with like 8 houses. And it's like, okay, this dude.
That's crazy.
This dude was a cocaine dealer, just got out of prison, turned his life around, made a choice, and now he's got 8 properties and a business and is a thriving young businessman trying to impact the African-American community. That's amazing.
Jeez.
Like, that's
yes.
a choice, right? That's a huge choice right there. So, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
I just get tired of people making excuses, you know, even in my own
yep.
family. I'm like, stop
yep.
making the excuses. Start making the choices.
Yeah, yeah,
so
absolutely.
I don't know if that answers your question, but –
100%
it
does. Yeah, man. I love it. I do want to make a distinction. Right? I do want to point this out for those that are, because I didn't know this until a couple years ago when I really started getting into financial literacy, started reading more books and started listening to guys like Dave Ramsey and Grant Cardone and, you know, the other financial, even some Tony Robbins stuff, you know, about financial literacy. And there's a big difference between being a millionaire and being a net worth millionaire, right? So if you have a net, because I didn't know this, but there are people in this world who are net worth millionaires. They're net worth. They got investments. They've got 401ks. They've got whatever they have. Their liabilities are less than what their assets and everything and, you know, whatever they've got built is less than that. And so therefore, they have a net worth of $1 million. but they still live paycheck to paycheck because all of their money is tied up in assets and in investments and, you know, whatever different things. Then there are people who literally have millions of dollars because they have an amazing business. They have an amazing investment portfolio. They have, you know, whatever. So does that kind of ring true for you? You see that whether they're net worth millionaires or they're money millionaires or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, most of the people that I'm meeting as I was writing my book and talking to different millionaires, I mean, they were just in a whole different place, you know, because I thought I was doing pretty well by being a millionaire, by a net worth millionaire and a million, you know, being successful by the time I was 40. And not, you know, some people call themselves millionaires because they have a couple million dollars in property, but half of it's leveraged or three quarters of it's leveraged. That's not 100%. A millionaire. That's not a net worth millionaire. You're dreaming.
I get net worth, right? Yep.
Yeah. And, but you know, these people, you know, once you get closer to that number and you start thinking that way, everything changes. Just your whole thought process changes. And so, you know, for me, after I crossed the millionaire mark, it's like, okay, what's next? Well, $10 million, that's next. Okay. How am I going to get there? Once I get there, I'll be like, okay, what's next? Can I get to 100 million? Because I believe that wealth is created for a purpose. And it's to help other people. And so you can have a much better positive impact on this world if you have assets to be able to do stuff with. And so I was just talking to a guy today, and I'm like, you know, people believe you ought to help widows and orphans. Well, how many widows and orphans can you help when you're broke? Because you're not managing your money. Not very many.
Right.
You can't help anybody when you're broke. And so if 78% of Americans are broke, they're not helping anybody. So, and the 22%, unfortunately, that are wealthy or not living paycheck to paycheck, some of them are not doing good things with their money. So, and we won't go into that today, but I've been looking at that as well, and I'm not real happy with giving, the giving and the altruism side of financial. But what I hope to do is, you know, educate people financially so you create a bunch of millionaires who go around going, hey, you know what, these people over here need some help right now, or how can I have a positive impact in the community or in the world or, you know, whatever those things are. And I think that's what wealth is created for.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. You know, I also absolutely am entranced. I mean, I love the systems and strategies. And, you know, I wish it was a millionaire strategy that was like, go talk to Barb over here at this one place. And then invest in this or do this. But there's so many different ways. I've read so many stock books. I've read so many investment books and wealth. And I got a friend. His name's David Osborne. He's part of the One Life community that we're all a part of. And he's got a book that's called Wealth Can't Wait. Very, very amazing book. And yeah, he talks about, you know, the net worth millionaire and why, you know, you should be building wealth is because of what exactly you just said, is that it's meant for you to help other people, and it's meant for you to live an amazing life. It's meant for you to give. It's meant for, like, there's all these things that are mixed in, right? Givers are usually the ones that have an abundance mindset. It's the scarcity mindset people that'll never be millionaires.
Yeah, or they've become millionaires and don't do the right things. But
or they don't do the right things. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a much, much smaller group, though. Yeah, and the statistics are, I was reading, I think there's about 10.5 million households, like millionaire households in America, which is roughly about 10% of American households. I think there's about 115 million American households today, you know, whether it's rental properties or, you know, houses, but – you know, roughly 10% of American households are millionaire households right now, which is pretty astronomical number when you think about that. And and then you start looking at statistics like, hey, I think it was 2016. It was either 400,000 or 600,000 people became millionaires in 2016. When you start looking at that and going, wow, that's pretty impressive. It's a small drop in the bucket when you look at 335 million people in the United States, but it's still a very significant number. And then you have to ask this question to the people that you meet, like, okay, if 400,000 to 600,000 people became millionaires in 2016, why not you? Because that's not an insignificant number of people. Like, it's repeatable. And that's the thing where I talk about money's a math problem. 416,000, you know, 600,000 people repeated that process. in 2016. So don't make excuses on why you can't do it, because that many people did do it. So
yeah, absolutely. Let's quickly talk about how to do it, and then we'll go into your book. So what you talked about investments. You know, you can buy real estate, you can invest in real estate, you can invest in companies, you can invest in stocks, you can invest, I mean, there's a lot of different things. What was your path to a million? What did that look like?
Yeah, so, I mean, mainly, obviously, get out of debt as fast as you can. I did that about 18 months, and then I got my wife's debt, and I think it took us about another 2 years to get out of her debt. And then we picked up some, I paid a couple, as Dave says, stupid taxes. I paid a couple stupid taxes in there. I went, you know, broke my own rules and had to pay for those. And, you know, you get married and you want to impress your wife. You make a couple bad decisions. We won't go into those right now. But made a lot of good decisions in there too. So first was like, you got to get out of debt. You know, debt's going to kill you, especially with some of these interest rates. I mean, I was looking at one today, 25% interest on a credit card. I'm like, that's highway robbery, man. And if you got any kind of balance, it's just ridiculous. The bank, you're making the banks rich, not yourself. So get rid of your credit cards. The next thing, you know, obviously don't use things that depreciate. Cars go down in value. If you sink your money into your car every 5 to 7 years, well, then you're just losing it. After 5 to 7 years, a car's value is about 25% of what it was when it was first purchased. And so that's going down in value. But if you buy things like houses and you invest in houses, well, those go up in value on average about 5.4% per year. And it also depends on what neighborhood you're in. So a house is a good investment, but you also have to make the right kind of loan arrangement. And so if you do a 30-year loan on a house, a lot of people make the mistake of moving. The average family moves every 5 to 7 years. Well, what happens? In the first 5 to 7 years, they get another house, but they upsize the house, which upsizes the payment, which resets the interest. And so what people don't know or don't understand is that in the first 5 to 7 years, all you're pretty much paying on is interest on the house. You're not paying really almost any equity. And so you're not gaining any ground against your debt. So if you're a family and you refinance a house every 5 to 7 years, and you do that for, let's say you do that 3 times. Cycle 1, cycle 2, cycle 3, you've now used 21 years of your life but built almost very little equity compared to what you should have in a house if you're doing a 30-year mortgage interest. Now, if you do a 20-year or 15, you're accelerating your payments and you're building equity faster in your house. So you really got to look at what type of loan that you take out on your house. And it almost doesn't matter what interest rate you use, because the same cycle happens, whether it's, you know, whether it's talking about 3.5%, you're still paying all that interest up front. And it's just very front loaded heavy if you do a 30-year loan. So you really need to look at that from a financial standpoint. My first house, I did our first house cost us $62,500, $500 a month house payment. We lived in it about 6 years. When I sold it for about 10 grand more than we paid for it, but that was really the only equity I got out of it. And so I think I built about $3,000 in equity, but my sale price was 10 grand higher. So I walked away with about 13 grand, but only 3,000 of it was equity. So the bank took all of that other money that I paid over 6 years. So it just floored me.
Wow.
Like, that's ridiculous, man. I didn't know that. And so while I was learning about stocks, I didn't learn about mortgages, at 25. And so I didn't learn about that until later in life. But our next house, what we did is we said, you know what, we're going to pay this thing off pretty quick. And so we paid it off in, I think, 6 years. And so, and we got, just because I'm an anti-debt guy, just like, you know, blow this stuff away, get rid of it. And and we were able to do that, you know. And so we did our investing and our, you know, debt, you know, get rid of it, because that was my mindset. Now, you'll talk to a lot of people who say, don't ever pay your house off, because you make more money in the stock market if you invest. And that is true to an extent, but you still carry the risk of the house payment, and you still carry, it really depends on the percentages. So like today, I think interest rates are like 3.95 or something like that, 3.75. Mm-hmm. But as you get closer to that 6, 7, 8% range on your loan, well, then it doesn't make as much sense, because you're carrying more risk for the return. And so then it starts to look like, well, let me see what I can do to pay my house off early. Yep. And so you have to really just weigh the math in there. I'm a no risk guy, so I that's not true. I do risky stuff, but when it comes to debt, I'm like, nah, I don't carry debt risk, but I'll do some investing risk. You know, I played cryptocurrency, and I, you know, had some ups and downs. I took my money out of mutual funds and put it into higher risk investments. And so, and I've been happy with the results. But I think when you get into investments, you have to get into an investment at the level of knowledge that you have. And so, like, for example,
absolutely.
And so I like to think of it as a hierarchy of risk. And if you want to invest in a single stock, my wife told me to invest in Apple stock at $3 a share. She knew nothing about stock investments. She just liked Apple as a product, and that was her brand. Apple was $3 a share. 10 years later, it was up 10,000%. So if I would have put in $10,000, I don't remember what the math I did on it was, but if I would have put in 10 grand, I think it was like $600,000, whatever the math worked out to be.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I had adopted a low risk mutual fund strategy, and that cost me $500,000. That's the way I look at that, because in your lifetime, you can't get a 10,000% return on the S&P index. Like, it doesn't work that way. So in that case, you have to decide, okay, I have my low risk investments, and that's where I'm playing, which is I get a good return. It's predictable. Money is a math problem. It's predictable, and it should produce this when I'm at retirement. That's what I would call a safer level of investment. And then you look at real estate and go, okay, I don't want all my money in the stock market. I want some of it in real estate. So what would it look like for me to have 50% of my money in real estate, 50% of my money in the stock market? That's a good, you know, diversified kind of way you're lowering your risk. If the stock market drops like it did in 2008, 2009, you have your real estate rental properties and things to fall back on. You're not, you know, so locked in to the stock market. Your returns, depending on how you've got them made, maybe you get better returns. You can look at REIT investments, real estate investment trusts. Some of those return better than the S&P Index 500. So those are kind of a couple of different options. And then as you learn and gain more information, you can play with other things that are a little bit more risky, but you want it to be a low percentage of your portfolio or a lower percentage of your portfolio. You don't want to go throwing 50% of your portfolio into cryptocurrency when Bitcoin is as volatile as it is. That would be a very, in my opinion, a very dumb thing to do. But if you had a good sizable retirement savings already up and you said, hey, I want to try some riskier stuff, let me pull 5% over here to play with this. That might be an acceptable thing to do based on your knowledge and, you know, what you could do. It's money you don't need. If you lose it, you know, that's the thing you're playing with, is like, if I lose this money, am I going to die? Is it going to wound me? No, I'm going to just beat myself up because I made a stupid mistake. But you want to look for those opportunities. Yeah, I'm in a stock right now. I just got in. I took my money out of a mutual fund. It's not all of my money, but some of my money, and stuck it into a tech stock, a very innovative tech, healthcare tech stock. And I'm getting like 50% returns on it right now in less than I think it's been like just over 12 months. And it's poised to go a lot higher than that over the next 12 to 18. Yeah, because they're coming out of
IPO.
They're getting closer to that. They're not quite there yet. They're getting rid of individual investors. They're out of the kind of like angel investor phase, and they're getting into institutional investor phase. Yeah, and so the big guys. So they don't need guys with hundreds of thousands of dollars anymore. They're starting to court people that have like $30 million, and so they're not playing with the little fish anymore. They're playing with the big fish, and that's when your stock value starts going up, and you start going, okay, this could play out pretty well for me. And I think it's okay to do those kinds of things, but only if you're kind of shored up in some other areas. Now, some high risk stock investors, and you can't say that they don't win. They're going to tell you something different than what I'm telling you. But I'm talking about for the average person today, with 78% of people living paycheck to paycheck. You know, do the safe things first before you do the risky things. But there are guys who strike it rich who do the risky things, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to tell you to take the risk. You know, Grant Cardone, he's a leverage it, man, leverage that thing, sell it. $500 million in real estate. I got $500 million in real estate. Leverage. And so those are kind of my thought processes. Is just you know, what is the acceptable risk in return for where you're at today, and then keep growing, man. Once you, just like math, English, and science, it took you 12 years to study that stuff to get out and be useful in society. How much studying are you going to do about money? Because if you've done none, mm-hmm. you can't expect any return. But if you start learning now, and everybody starts the same place, you know, that's what I love about it. Warren Buffett. He started at the same place those 78% of people started. He didn't start with that knowledge.
Yep.
He started right. not knowing crap about money, and then somewhere along the line, he started learning about money. He might have started learning at age 5 from his dad. But when did he start? And that's the same place everybody starts. You just have to put in the effort to do it. And I think that's the beautiful yep. thing about the opportunity. So,
yep, 100%. I told my 16-year-old son, I was like, hey, man, it's time to get a job, buddy. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to set up your savings account. And you're going to take 10% of your income, however much it is. I don't care if it's $5. You're going to take 10% of your income and you're going to put it in that savings account. And that's going to be your investment account. He's like, for what? I'm like, whatever you want. Invest in a car, invest in stocks, invest in, you know, Roth IRA, like whatever. Like, you are going to set up an investment account. And you are going to invest that money when it gets to a certain percentage, whatever dollar amount you want it to be. But you're going to take 10% of your income and you're going to put it into your investment account. And so what I noticed is that a lot of people don't factor in that 10%. Like, either you pay yourself, right? You pay yourself uh-huh. first. They don't factor in, well, I should put 10% towards savings. Like, they don't even factor that into their budget. They look at their bills,
yep.
make sure their bills are paid. And then whatever's left over is what they use for food, or whatever is left over they use for, you know, let's go out to the bar. Let's go out to the movies. Let's go, you know, oh, I got all this money left over, whatever. But they're not putting it to work, and that's where
yep.
they fail.
Yeah. yeah.
So
I just did a presentation to a small group yesterday, and my budgeting philosophy is very simple. I break the budget into four groups. It's very simple. Like, don't overcomplicate the budget. People hate budgeting. I hate budgeting. But if you just pay attention to, like, four numbers – everything's going to be great. And that's this: you need to break your budget into living money, which is a fixed number. It's what you've got to pay your bills with every month, whether you got to eat, sleep, drink, whatever you got to do. That's what goes into that bucket. Your next most important bucket is your wealth money bucket. How much money are you putting into your wealth money? You just said your son was putting 10%. A lot of people are putting 0%. If they're too young, they don't care about retirement, so they're not getting ready for it. And right. if they're too old, they're scared to death of it, and they don't know what to do. But the reality is most people are doing zero. A lot of professionals recommend, these investment professionals say, hey, save 15% to retirement. I call that number crap. I don't like the 15% number, because if you're making $50,000 a year and you put 15% back, it's going to suck. Your retirement's going to suck. And so if you're making $150,000 and you put 15% back, well, that's a little bit better number, but still not what I want to be living and retiring on. So what I try to do is say, hey, look at your living money, figure out what that is. Let's make sure that's a good number. Let's look at your wealth money and make sure that those are the two most important numbers on your budget. Then beyond that, you get into the play money, which is what you're talking about, the beering and the drinking and the movies and everything else you're doing to have fun. And if you're a redneck, you're buying four-wheel drives and you're buying ATVs, right? I'm in Tennessee, right. So there's a lot of ATVs and trucks down here. The next thing would be your other money, which I would say are things like birthday presents, you know, travel, whatever it is. You know, you just throw different things in there that don't fit one of the other categories. You're taking vacation, that's in play money. Right. But all of those things need to be in balance at some level. So if you pay attention to those four groups, you could end up in a really good place. And so there were times when I was on my wealth journey, man, I'm putting 50% of my money into living money, and I'm putting 50% of my money into wealth money. And I'm going, you know, we are socking this money away like crazy. And we're having, you know, I left off percentages at the bottom. Of course, I have some play money in there. But what I'm trying to say is, my living money did not outpace my wealth money. My wealth money and my living money were the same. And I was getting it done. And, you know, when I realized at 25, I got to make a change, that's what I was doing. I was like, man, let's just sock as much wealth money in there as we can. And I just loaded that bucket up as much as I could. So
I love it, man. I love it. Great information. Everybody listening right now, do exactly what he is talking about doing. I'm going to try that out and see, because I'm always trying to learn different things. We got about 5 minutes left before we close the show. Okay, so here's what I want to do. take about 30 seconds and do a shameless plug. Plug your friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, programs, products, services, your book, whatever it is that you want the audience to know and to do. Shameless plug moment. Go.
So my goal with what I'm doing is trying to get as much of this financial information in people's hands without resistance as possible. So if you go to my website, there's a free ebook there called Creating Millionaire Families. And I really want people to start thinking differently about their finances for themselves and their families. It's a free ebook. It's 50 pages. It's material I couldn't put into my primary book because the publisher didn't want to make the book thicker. And so it's free. Go download it and take a look. There's even a budget in there on how to make a teenager into a millionaire by the time they're 18. And so just take a look at that. Yeah, and think about doing things differently with your life and your family. It's about building generational wealth with your family and just thinking about your life differently. So that if I could get you to do one thing today, that would be the thing I'd want you to do. And that's at themillionairechoice.com.
Themillionairechoice.com. Got it. Okay, so where can we find your book, The Millionaire Choice? Is it on Amazon? Do we buy it from your website? Where's the best place to get your book?
Yeah, you can get my book at any major bookseller, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Target, Walmart's carrying it, only online, though, at this time. And so you can't walk into the store and pick it up, or if you do walk into a store and pick it up, I'll consider that a good thing. In a short amount of time, I'll be putting up autographed copies, so you'll be able to purchase autographed copies from me directly on themillionairechoice.com. But for right now, you know, any of the major booksellers or retailers will have it.
Perfect. I love it. Tony, this was absolutely a killer episode, man. I'm really, really happy that we got to do this. I'm super pumped, you know, to learn about this stuff, to get my kids, you know, because I grew up poor. And you don't really know how poor you are until you're eating pancakes for dinner because you have nothing else in the house. So I really appreciate all of the value, the message that you bring. I'm going to the website right now. I'm going to get that ebook, make my kids read it, and, you know, we're going to get this thing going.
All right. Excited, man, for you.
All right. Hey, man, I really appreciate your time, and thank you for being a guest on Life Transformation Radio.
Awesome.
Hey, Life Transformation Radio listeners, if anything resonated with you, please go to themillionairechoice.com. Wherever you are right now, this is what you need to do. Go to themillionairechoice.com. And check out the show or the book that we were talking about on the show. And so as we close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.